Just because they're out on the street and homeless and don't have a job doesn't mean they're not human. They should have human rights where they have a place to live and have something to eat every day, you know?
The biggest thing is when you start losing yourself, you feel like you have no worth. You have nothing to give back. You get deeper into your addictions, and the more guilt you got because you're not around your family, or, and it's getting worse.
Affordable housing is so important. It's the basis to everything. Having stability. And if you have stability, you're able to cope a lot better with, you know, COVID, mental health, addiction. Without affordable housing, without that stability, the rest of that's going to affect your life so much more.
I've never been this well. I swear to goodness, in my entire life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Winter is Coming. This is a podcast where we are asking how we go from housing crisis to housing justice. And what you just heard at the start of today's episode was the audio from Safe, which is a documentary film from John Butler, a documentary that features tenants of the Indwell affordable housing communities and their stories of being targeted by housing injustice, of living close to the streets, and the hope that comes with supportive, permanent, affordable housing. And if you want to learn more about how you can support the documentary, how you can view that documentary, check out the details in the captions to this podcast, or Google Safe Documentary or search YouTube for Safe Documentary. This is a show where we feature a series of conversations on the housing crisis, and specifically looking at the housing crisis in the north of Turtle Island, in what we now call Canada. And if we zoom into that, our context here, where we're recording from, is the traditional territories for me of the Haudenosaunee, the Anishinaabe, and Neutral peoples, just outside of what we now call Kitchener-Waterloo in the province of Southern Ontario. And we are in our second season here, and we are talking all about how we go from housing crisis to housing justice. And on this show, when we say housing justice, we're talking about the comprehensive approach that really, truly helps us to figure out how do we enshrine housing as a human right, something that we say, we talk a big game about, but we know when we go down our streets in many cities and rural areas that we know we're not living out. So housing justice is not just about one thing. It's about the comprehensive approach that, yes, puts roofs over people's heads, yes, makes things more affordable so people can not have to choose between rent and groceries. Yes, it involves emergency shelters. It also involves supportive housing, affordable housing. So it's looking at this comprehensive approach about how we get from housing crisis to housing justice. And the housing crisis is not a one-size-fits-all approach. And so we need to have lots of voices, lots of perspectives. And that's what the show does. We wanted to take a second this week to let you know who's behind this podcast. Two groups that have come together for the Winter is Coming podcast are Trinity United Church, which is a church in what we now call Kitchener-Waterloo in the province of Ontario, Canada. And they are a church dedicated to advancing housing justice, advancing the resources and infrastructure of supportive housing and affordable housing in their community, but really all over the north of Turtle Island in what we now call Canada. And as well, the Hub Community Network, which is a network of youth and young adults seeded from the United Church of Canada that lives to empower young people to connect with the liberating love of Christ and build a more justice-rooted and inclusive world. So that's who's behind this podcast. Outside of this project, we also run a companion project called the Supportive Housing Advocacy Group. And that group meets two Wednesdays a month online to talk about how we can support each other in advancing affordable housing in our various projects and our activism work in our community, as well as putting out housing advocacy calls to action. So if you want more information on that, you can check the caption below. We have John Neufeld with us today, who is the executive director director of House of Friendship, which has been serving what we now call Kitchener-Waterloo, traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee, the Anishinaabe, the Neutral Peoples. It's been serving in this community that I live, that many of our listeners are coming from, for decades. And so we're delighted to have John on as somebody who has done a ton of work in his role as in House of Friendship and elsewhere to make a world that moves us closer to housing justice. So, John, thanks for being on today. Thanks for making the time. You're a busy guy leading House of Friendship, and we appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
Pleasure to be here, Adam.
So as we dive in, some context that we usually like to start with, even before we dive into kind of the issue and hear your insights on housing, is just to hear a little bit about you. So tell us a little bit about yourself and even beyond your role as executive director, maybe how you first got connected to the issue of housing, maybe even the work of housing justice or affordable housing or poverty reduction, poverty combating, poverty prevention. Tell us a little bit about how you got connected into this world.
Part of it, I believe, is my own personal story of being an immigrant kid who came to this country at the wrong time, from the wrong country. And that really shaped my childhood when I came as a seven-year-old. And the first day on the playground, I was told that I was a piece of crap. I don't belong because of the country I'm from, and I couldn't speak English. And that sort of followed me throughout sort of public school days, you know, and I had kids tell me that their parents had instructed them not to talk to me because of where I was from. And so when you have that, that shapes you. Right. And, you know, and when you get told there's something wrong with you because of where you're from or the language you speak. So I guess that was a little bit of my introduction to issues of justice and maybe not specifically housing justice, but people struggling with housing injustice, addiction, poverty, mental health, homelessness. I mean, the common thread is that often those individuals are told they don't belong. Something's wrong with them. And so although I can't identify necessarily with, you know, being homeless, I can identify with the deep hurt and pain of not belonging. And so I think that was a driving force that shaped me. And the other thing, you know, Adam, in your work with the Hub and youth and young adults, it's just such critical work, because I would say I'm only here today because the one place I did belong was a faith community where I was valued. My gifts were nurtured. And it was actually particularly in the youth years when, you know, folks like yourself, Adam, saw something in me, believed in me, gave me a safe space to learn about myself. And so I think this kind of work that is being done with the Hub is so critical to give voice and space to young people to figure out what they're doing. And it was in those years that I uncovered some leadership abilities and gifts, and they were called out in me. And so I paid attention to that and have tried to pursue that. But if I look at my leadership today, it really was nurtured in that type of environment for which I'm incredibly grateful for.
Yeah, I appreciate you kind of turning the spotlight back on the work we do at the Hub for a moment. For those who want to know more about what we do, the youth and young adult community network that some of the people behind this podcast lead, we always have links in the description. But we are really interested in how a generation that is coming up can be change makers, be difference makers, and specifically in the world that we're living in now, knowing that issues of justice, issues particularly of housing are going to continue to be more and more relevant as this system that we live in makes it more and more difficult for folks to achieve shelter. And as we know, you know, shelter, housing is a grounding force of stability that allows people to thrive or inhibits the ability to flourish and thrive. And the work that House of Friendship is doing although not specific to necessarily particularly youth and young adults, as you talked about, belonging is a key factor. And as we record these conversations, as we produce this show, we just hear what you're saying as a common thread that comes up, the need at its root to belong in order to thrive.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing is that I've been very fortunate with Adam is I've also been given different lenses to look at things. And so after finishing high school, as a sort of way to honor and thank my faith community, I went and studied theology for a year, which then turned into 3 years. And I actually did an internship in a church, and I realized church work was way too difficult. So I needed to find something easier. So I pursued both education and social work, and then after that in business. And I'm incredibly grateful for those three different lenses. You know, I think theology helps you understand justice and social justice. Social work helps you understand why there are the challenges that we have. And business gives you the tools to actually do something, to move from one to the next, from one space to the next. And so I feel very fortunate to have had you know, the educational background, the mentors that I received through those three different disciplines. And so when House of Friendship, the opportunity came about 15 years ago, it's been such a gift in my life to be able to bring those together. And that's really when housing justice really became a forefront issue for me. You know, when I was doing my social work degree in Toronto, I did work at Covenant House in a youth shelter on weekends. So, you know, I had a bit of a taste of it then, but it was really coming to this community, being really immersed in, you know, the work of House Friendship and shelter and supportive housing, affordable housing, our addiction work, working in low-income neighborhoods, that I started to really, really start seeing the picture. And what fascinates me is, you know, House of Friendship was born 85 years ago, right here in this community, you know, out of a small prayer group. Some women were coming together during the economic depression, and, you know, everything was crumbling around everywhere. It wasn't just in this community. You know, the dirty 30s, right, was a real thing. And what I love about this prayer group is they could have just kept praying. Yeah. They could have just kept praying, keep comfortable. And they said, no, we can't change the world, but there's got to be something we can do. And so, you know, just around the corner from, you know, Trinity Church, in a little mission house on King Street, they did one radical, gracious act of hospitality that changed everything. And that is in 1939, in the economic depression, when there was, as they were called back then, hobos and transients showing up on our streets, people who had no families, who had no work because there was no work, you know, the people that didn't belong, maybe didn't speak the right language. And they invited them in for a meal. And, you know, those are our humble roots, where we maybe fed six or so of these characters. And I fast forward 85 years later, it's a bit of a story of the fish and loaves. We're serving over 40,000 people annually at House of Friendship. Wow. In one way or another, whether that's providing food, whether that's providing housing, addiction treatment, whether it's providing programming for children and youth, whether it's supporting newcomers, all because a small group of women, a prayer group, a people of faith said, we can't change the world, but there's something we got to do. And what I've loved is throughout that 85-year history, you know, I always say the principle of love thy neighbor does not change ever. That principle is the same. The fun part for all of us, faith, non-faith, as humans who believe in that concept of loving thy neighbor, is what does that look like in today's context? And I think that's what this podcast is trying to uncover and look at and help people realize, you know, in 1939, love thy neighbor looked like inviting them in for a meal.
Yeah.
In 2024, loving thy neighbor looks radically different. And And I'm not sure what it looks like. And I don't think when you're living in that time period, you actually know yourself. You just try things, you respond, you learn, you innovate, you stop doing some things, you try new things. And some people find that overwhelming. And some people say, oh, like, why can't it be like the good old days? And it's like, no, the gospel did not call us in to be comfortable. There's nothing comfortable about the gospel. And that's the fun part of it is what does that look like in today's context to love thy neighbor? And yeah, it's shaking things up. And it's very unsettling in the faith communities because, faith communities saying, oh, we're dwindling, or, we don't have as many people sitting there, or young people aren't coming out. Well, that's because we're going through a time period, a significant time period where change is required, and that is unsettling. But it is in those time periods, when we look back historically, when incredible things happen and new
Yes.
pathways are formed. And so that's kind of where we're at today.
Yeah, I and so many of our folks who are listening are coming from faith communities. Not everybody, but I think that what you said is really true, that when we talk about loving your neighbor, that is not something that needs to be confined to an ideology or to a particular faith or cultural tradition. And the ability for us to figure out in every, new context and every new generation, as every new reality in the world around us unfolds, the ability to us to respond and go, what does that look like? I think is in some ways it's constantly shifting sands, and yet there's something beautiful about what you're saying, that's the fun part, we don't just get to lean back and be complacent. And some people and some faith communities may still be doing simple, beautiful, radical acts of inviting people in for meals, but we also know that there's so many more ways in where I was about to say 2023, but we're now in 2024. In 2024, to respond to that question, how can I love my neighbor?
And our young people and young adults are driving that. They're asking those questions and they're saying, and I've had this from my own teen kids say, the church of your childhood and the church of how you grew up, it's not going to be the same for us. It's going to look different. And they're asking different questions and they're pushing and challenging. And I think that's fabulous.
Let's go down that road a little bit when we talk about the investment in young people. Obviously, anybody who knows the Hub Community Network, as I've said, that's where we root ourselves. That's where we root our work. That's part of where this podcast came from, is the team behind it. Involves folks from Trinity United Church. It involves folks from young people from the Hub Community Network who are passionate about not just the challenges that young people face themselves, but of responding and saying that we don't have to accept a system where loving your neighbor is the last thing on a priority list, where wealth and capitalist ideas of success are what push us forward. So when you think back to your days, as you talked about, as a young person starting to build those leadership skills and starting to get connected with not just how those leadership skills could, advance you personally, but it seems like you really started to get that sense of how leadership is something that, as Martin Luther King talks about, is something that we do for others, is something that we do to serve the world around us. How did that really spark in you? Because lots of folks have gone to youth group, millions of folks have gone to youth group, but not everyone necessarily starts to make those connections between leadership, between justice in every faith community. So maybe talk a little bit more about how that resonated for you, because obviously that started you on a path where now you're doing some fantastic work in housing.
Adam, it's about mentorship. I was very blessed and fortunate that, as I came out of my studies, the first role I was given was with Bridgeway Family Homes, serving with foster children and youth. And I was just mentored by incredible leaders who believed in servant leadership. And they modeled for me and taught me that leadership isn't about a title, leadership isn't about a position. Leadership is about serving others, and there's a joy in that. It's not a burden. And I saw that in Ron and Cheryl, who I, you know, had the privilege of serving with, and what they taught me. Sorry, I'm getting a little emotional thinking about the gift they gave me in modeling that kind of leadership, and they invested heavily in that leadership and provided opportunities for my own growth and training in leadership. And so I guess what I would say is it's good to be idealistic. It's good to be you know, have issues of social justice. But what I would also say to young people is be willing to put the work in. Like, this isn't easy stuff. This is hard. And it's easy to become cynical and critical. It's easy to say, well, the government needs to do this, the government needs to do that. You know what? It's about getting your hands dirty. It's about developing yourself. It's about developing your own skills and figuring out how you can influence and make change. And sometimes you have to make painful decisions, and it's really hard. And there's lots of times, you know, as many times during the pandemic where I was ready and wanting to quit, or thinking, hey, things aren't going the way they should be, or it's just easy to focus on the external. And what I have to say is, both at House of Friendship, I say this to our team, and I always remind myself, is focus on the things you can control. Focus on the, you can't change other people's behavior, you can't tell other people how, what to do, but you can. And you know, I, yes, it's cliche-ish, be the change you want to see in the world, but model that, work at that, develop some really great skills in an area that could be a gift to the world. But like, it's hard work. This isn't easy stuff. But keep focusing on what you can make a change at.
Yeah, and I think there's something that's particularly relevant about that, because we live in a culture where so many things are, for those of us who have a lot of privilege, so many things are easy, so many things are immediate, so many things are kind of delivered to us on our phones or at our front door the next day. You know, we can order something, it can show up, and so I think we're conditioned to be able to be a little complacent. And so then when we come across work like housing, like how we can respond to problems that maybe we're still passionate about, I think in a lot of ways we haven't practiced that muscle of leaning in to the hard work. And that's not necessarily even a youth young adult thing. I don't think that's restricted to one generation. But yeah, we live in a time where everything can kind of just be delivered to us in sort of an antiseptic way, where we get to stay behind a glass window. And I think that's why we live in a time where, when we talk, even you talk about politics and about civic leaders, it's really easy for us to be passionate during an election time, and then recognize that, oh, maybe there's 4 years or more till the next one, and start to lean back when the 98% of the time is between elections. 98% of the time is an opportunity to lean in to the work, and winter is not stopping just between elections. And so the ability to actually start to develop that muscle again for many of us. And I'm speaking to myself here as someone who, even hosting a podcast, it's easy for me to sit behind a computer screen and talk to folks and behind a microphone, and then not challenge myself to say, what can I be doing? What can I be doing on an everyday level, and on a sustainable level, recognizing, as you also said, you know, we're not promised to change the world. And in fact, we don't want to actually set our unrealistic sights for disappointment, assuming we're going to radically overnight, you know, change a whole system. But we know that there are things that we can do. And when we start locally, when we start with community, I think that's a huge thing that for youth and young adults, often we miss, because we're so connected into a global world, which is beautiful, and we can learn a ton from that. We can broaden our horizon. We can connect across bounds that were previously there. But the ability to refocus, the ability to shift maybe our focus on community, on local, I think is something that's incredibly important, and something that often gets lost.
100%. Let me just riff off one quick thing you said with the political piece. You know, that's a great example. It's I hear a lot of complaining about different political stripes or different elected officials. And, that's the easy thing to do. It's easy to call someone out, critique someone. It takes a lot more work to be a bridge builder and to take the true time to understand someone's viewpoints that are different than your own, and to build relationships with people that may view the world differently. But that's how you get things done, and that's what I'm talking about, this hard work.
That is the end of part one of our conversation with John Neufeld, the director of House of Friendship, an organization in Waterloo region that helps 42,000 individuals each year who need food, housing, community resources, or healing from addictions. And we will be back next week on Tuesday, March 26th, as we continue this conversation with John Neufeld. And you can search for us on any major podcast platform by searching Winter is Coming, a housing justice podcast, or by going to hub, H-U-B, leadership.podbean.com to get connected with us, the Hub Community Network, or Trinity United Church, or our housing advocacy group called SHAG, the Supportive Housing Advocacy Group, that is the shoulder project to this. We will see you next Tuesday for our next conversation. For Winter is Coming, I am Adam Cresswell, and we'll talk to you then.